Before we begin the show, we both want to say that we stand in solidarity with those fighting for a better world without racism and injustice. Black lives matter.
Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 62.
In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Tang Garden, Expedition to Newdale, Tiny Towns, and Maracaibo. We will discuss the BGG thread, switched from heavy board game to light and small games, and get up to our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits. It took me some time to get my drool face on, as the kids say.
It's a good drool face.
It is a pretty good drool. I have resting drool face, and then I just really, like, you know, go up one level before we start.
Oh, yeah. I like that, actually, a resting drool face.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's definitely a thing.
You're welcome.
I have resting thinking about a euro face.
Yeah, which is, yeah, sure.
Resting, which is beige, me thinking.
Resting beige face.
Beige face, resting beige face. I love that. Loves it. Speaking of beige, you can buy yourself some beige over at Board Game Bliss.
Oh, snap. That was wicked.
And if you spend $100 or more, you can take $5 off with the coupon code ATB-TAKE5OFF100. It's one use per customer. And that's and thanks from our sponsor, Board Game Bliss.
And there are a lot of cool games coming out these days, it seems like.
Oh, I feel the opposite.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Oh. I'm excited about what's coming, but I'm not super pumped about what's been coming out. Like, it's been a while since I got a box of games at my door.
Are you sure that's just not because mail is super slow these days?
I am sure, because... Okay. When I ship something, I'm tracking it on a daily basis.
You didn't get the Mind Extreme as soon as it came out?
I did not.
Michelle.
No, I did not. Yeah.
It's extreme.
Makes it extreme anyways?
It comes with a bag of Doritos. So that's what I know. Oh, perfect game to play while eating Doritos too.
Oh my goodness. I was playing Empires of the North, and we were about to have dinner, and Chloe was just playing across from me, making the game up. She's like, "Can I eat and play your game?" I was like, "Oh girl, I can't believe you even asked that question." I'm like, "You have cards in your hand." She's like, No.
Hey, Michelle. No. Michelle.
Yo.
Speaking of eating, I have a question for you. This is our Ask Me Anything bit, wherein we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby.
We sure do.
And you've kind of spoiled mine, but let's pretend that mess and potential damage to your cards and components isn't an issue.
Okay.
So we have to go in that headspace here.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to give me your top three snacks to eat while board gaming.
Without worrying about... cards.
Yeah, I mean, you can if you want, but you know.
Yeah. Well, I like pretzels for real, because they're like chips, which I love, but they do not get your hands dirty.
This is true.
So we'll go with pretzels.
Yeah, that's one.
And candy.
There are a lot of candies.
I'm going to say Sour Patch Kids.
That's fair.
Yeah. And what else would be good is good. That's usually what I have. Probably M&M's maybe. Get some chocolate in there. We've got some sweet candy. We got some chocolate. And then we got some some salty, chippy stuff.
Nice. Good choices. Yeah. I approve.
Thank you. Whew. That's a really serious question.
It was. Whew. Yes.
All right. I got one for you.
Okay. Bring it on.
All right. If you could have one board game related wish come true. So you have a little genie and he comes out and he's like, I'll grant you three wishes, but one of them has to be board game related. What would it be?
Okay. So it's a good thing you mentioned a genie coming out, because I would ask said genie for said genie's lamp and then put all my games in said lamp.
Well, that's awesome.
Then I would have no space limitations.
That's incredible.
Yes.
So, that's the best answer that could have been.
It is. I know. Thank you.
Brilliant.
I've thought about this so much. So.
How will you decide what game to play, though?
Like, you know, a spreadsheet or, wait. But as part of putting in the lamp, it's got like a holographic projection that you just like press it. And then all your games, a virtual board game shelf pops up.
I love it. Have you ever seen those collection binders people put together? Where you can like flip, like they'll print the cover.
Yes.
And then you can like flip through. Yeah.
So, okay, this is kind of on a tangent, but not. Something that like a lot of people in the education field and I've been doing, they're making like Google like these Bitmoji classrooms using like your Bitmoji.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making like, they'll make like bookshelves and stuff. I could totally make one that just is board game shelves and has all my board games. And then you click it and it will like take you to the board game. That's such a good idea.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Art. Oh my gosh. I'm totally going to do that. And they'll go to like Watch It Played and John Gets Games playthroughs and Rado playthroughs. Oh, I'm so smart.
Rich built me an app for like a game roulette, basically, where I would like, I could set criteria. So like two players, you know, light, 45 minutes. And then it would be like, and go through my collection and spit me like three choices. And then I had to pick from there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very sweet. I need to marry your Rich.
Sorry, he's mine. But
darn it.
Yeah. But apps are shareable, hey? You don't have to, like, jump to marriage to get an app.
No. I know how the world works. Believe me.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of how the world works.
Yes.
Wait. That's not saying anything.
You left me hanging by myself on most of that one.
Yeah, I did. I did. It's just, you have such a beautiful voice. I just love hearing it.
I know. So what was I thinking about?
Well, this is our Guess the Game bit, wherein we give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from The Board Game Geek to guess a game, and we ask that you guess along with us.
The Board Game Geek.
The.
Not a Board Game Geek. The Board Game.
The. Capital. The. All capital. The. Yeah.
All right. Yes. Who's going first?
I'll go first, I'll give you clues first.
Okay.
Okay. You ready?
Bring it on.
Am I waiting for something? Did you say hold on?
I said bring it on.
Oh, I was like, okay, this is really...
Hold on, I have to get in the right headspace to be able to guess this game.
Stretch.
I'm stretching.
All right. This was published in 2003.
Whoa, you're kicking it old school. Okay.
I am. It has 27,000 ratings and has a rating of 7.0 on BGG. Or average rating, I should say. It plays... Sorry?
Okay.
It plays 2 to 6 players in 45 to 60 minutes and has a weight of 2.11.
Fix it. It's not that old, is it?
I don't think so.
Catan.
But it's not Dixit. No. Catan was in the 90s, I think.
So.
All right. So, do you want to keep guessing?
No.
No. Okay. No. Do you want some mechanisms?
Sure.
All right. We've got card drafting, hand management, set collection, and tile placement.
Not Seven Wonders.
Mm-mm.
2003 in tile placement and drafting.
Yeah, card drafting. Yeah. Set collection.
Carcassonne? No.
New. It was. I don't know. I think this was on Will Wheaton's tabletop, but actually now I'm double guessing myself.
Not world. You just asked me Small World last episode or two episodes ago or something, I think. Okay. Nope. No idea yet.
No clues? Okay. Category. Arabian. City building. Medieval.
Aren't Arabian and medieval two completely different time periods?
Well, I think Arabian can be, like, from Arabia.
Oh. No. I should know it with these, with what you just gave me, I feel like. Should I know it? I should know it, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's a staple, obviously, with 27,000 ratings. It's a game.
Yeah.
It's well known. I'll give you the publisher, actually. Sure. It might help. Queen Games published it. Oh, and it looks
Why can I only think of that dice rolling one?
It won the Spiel. Oh, it actually won the Spiel in 2003.
Well, I would definitely know that.
So just go through your Spiel knowledge. Come on.
Okay. Spiel.com. I still have no idea. I am really sucking here.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Okay. So yeah, you can buy this in all the mainstream stores that sell mainstream games. Let's see. It's re-implemented by two games.
Okay.
Cool. One of them being New York and the other being Granada.
Oh, Alhambra.
There you go. I don't know if I would have even known those clues.
I knew New York had something to do. New York. Cool. I still have never played that. I have played New York 1901 or whatever that is.
No, that's not even what they're talking about.
Oh, are they not? No, they're not. No, New York. No, Queen did New York. That's a different game. There's. Yeah, I have not played either of them.
There's just one called New York that does not have as good of a rating and is not as popular with only 497 rating.
I did own that for a while, actually. And then traded
New York or Alhambra?
Yeah. No, New York.
Cool. I actually really like Alhambra. I think it's a great game.
I've never played it.
It's good. I like it.
I should rectify that. It's like, I've also never played a complete game of Carcassonne. I feel like I should rectify that as well.
You probably should. I'm not a huge fan of Carcassonne, but.
But still, my gamer cred is like shocking.
Yeah, for sure. You should get on that.
All right. Speaking of gamer cred, hint, hint. Okay. I mean, this game came out in 2007.
Oh, no.
It has a rating of 8 on BGG with 61,000 ratings.
Woo! Small World.
Go ahead.
Small World.
No.
Pandemic.
No. Are you crazy? Do you think I would give you anything to do with Pandemic right now?
I don't know.
Come on. All right. It plays 1 to 5 players.
No, it doesn't.
I didn't know it played one player, but hey, yes, it does, apparently. And it's a play time of 30 to 150 minutes.
What? That's ridiculous.
With a weight of 3.64.
Power Grid?
No.
2007? Is it Agricola?
It is!
Yay! Oh my gosh, I did good on that one.
You did really good on that one. Yeah.
Wow. It was, Agricola 2007, hey?
I was thinking about farming earlier, so I thought this would be a good choice.
Appreciate that. I actually played Agricola for the first time like a few weeks ago.
Really?
I did, yeah. Finally, I found it at a garage sale. This is like my only good find. You know how everyone's like posting like, I went to the thrift store and I found a $150 game for $3. Yeah, that never happens in Calgary, at least it seems. But I found a brand new Intrink Agricola for $15 at someone's garage sale. So I don't know. And then I never played it and I sold it because I never played it. And then after playing Cooper Island and realizing how much I liked the stress of like, oh, I can't do everything. And yeah, I realized how much I liked that. I was like, maybe I'll like Agricola. So I repurchased. Yeah, I really liked it. I want to give it another go. But yeah, I liked it.
I probably
it felt very familiar. I mean, I've played almost all of Uwe's other games, so.
But there is like pounds and pounds of extra content you can get now for it, so.
I do like that. I do like the aspect of trying to do your best with the hand that you're given and the possibilities with all the different decks. I think that's actually pretty cool. Yeah.
I'm sure I mentioned this on the show, but if not, one of my favorite experiences at any con was it like the first time I went to Origins and I played a life-size version of Agricola. Not life-size, because that would mean with real cows.
I was just going to say, was it like the whole room?
No, but it was pretty big. Yes, it was like three tables long and it had pieces of wood and stuffies for the animals.
What?
And I won and I got to take home two stuffies. I think a cow and a pig, which are still sitting on my shelf over there.
That's amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing.
That was probably one of my better gaming experiences.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of cool.
Cool. So cool. Yes. Pew, 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 pew,
pew, pew, pew, pew, pew, pew, pew, pew, pew, pew.
This is our pew, pew bit, wherein we explain games very poorly and then tell you what we think of them after a play or more using our super duper official scale of Michelle.
1, that would be a hard no. 2, meh. 3, I mean, it's fine. 4, tis a getter. And 5, it's got the spark.
The spark.
The spark.
So can I make you go first? Because I want to play both. Or do you want me to go first?
No, I can go first. That's
fine. This one I really, really super duper want to play and saw you talk about it the other day. I was like, oh, I really wish I can play it.
Oh, all right. By the way, my pew pew today has a subtitle of Fister Fun, but that's P-F-U-N.
Hold on, I have to write this down.
Because both my pew pews are Fister games.
It's so hard. Sorry. Yes, go ahead. It's so hard for me because I actually have to pay attention to what you say.
Ugh. Say you have to listen?
Funny.
Oh, well, I never say anything funny, so don't worry about it.
For our episode title. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So I am talking about Expedition to Newdale, which came out in 2019, has a rating of 7.6 on BGG with 580 ratings. It plays 1 to 4 players in 90 minutes with a weight of 2.93. It's designed by Alexander Pfister, art by Clemens Franz, and published by Lookout Games.
Sorry.
Wow. Okay. I'm not sure that's what they were going for when they won the title, but I dig it. That should be their new sound bit for like anything they ever make. Uh-huh. Look out! Okay. This is a game that I guess it's saying it's in the family of Oh My Goods, but Oh My Goods is a card game from a few years back. Engine builder, really. And this is basically taking it and making it a little bit more robust into a board game.
Uh-huh.
This is like a multi-use card type of game. So in front of you, you have a player board with, I think, like 8, maybe 10 slots for cards. And under each slot, there are worker spots. And some slots have more worker spots, some have less. And they're labeled -1, +1, +2, which I'll explain. And so what you're doing is you're going to get a hand of cards and you're going to be cycling through a lot of different cards through various mechanisms. And you're going to be building cards down onto into these slots. And then there's a worker placement phase where you have there's a few worker spots on a board, but you can also place them onto these worker spots for your cards. Uh-huh. And the cards produce additional goods. And in order to produce, they need they have a certain requirement, and I don't know what they call them, but they're basically workers. So you flip a card at the beginning of the round, and it'll say, like, there's 2 red workers, 1 blue worker, 3 yellow, like that sort of thing. Uh-huh. So that's where you're deciding where to put your worker. It's like in the minus 1 slot means you'll have 1 worker less. So if you need 3 yellow and 1 red and no red shows up on the card, then you can still produce, but you'll produce less. So, so that's the left side of the card saying, okay, you need these workers in order to produce these goods, whatever the goods the card produces. And then on the right side of the card, there's another method for creating goods, and that's either taking goods that you've produced from your other card. So let's say you produced ore on another card, you can take that ore and produce, I don't know, iron. That doesn't make sense. Grain. Oh, I should be a board game designer. So that's another way. Or you can discard cards. Okay. So every card has an icon. Again, I said multi-use cards, so that's another use for cards. So they'll say, like, hey, if you have cards with wood in your hand, you can discard. And for each one that you discard, you can put a good on this card. And so that's basically it. But the interesting part about the workers is twofold. One, you're placing your workers on the different spots before you reveal that card that tells you, hey, you've 3 yellow people and 1 red person. So there's a push your luck mechanism in the game. You're trying to decide, okay, do I think I'll have enough of what I need? You can always replace, discard cards in lieu of missing people. So there's a little bit of a push your luck, but I feel like it's not so push your luck that it's like random. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then the workers are also numbered. So they go, you have workers numbered 1 to 4.
Okay.
You start with 1 and 2, you can purchase 3 and 4 later in the game. And so those trigger in the order. So when you're placing your workers, you're placing them A in the order that you want to trigger things, which has an impact, obviously, because, hey, you need this good to do this or whatever. And B, there's that whole like production thing around your card. Like, will I have enough? Should I go +2? Should I go -1? Like, what should I do? Because the board has 8 different slots, and I mentioned each slot is labeled differently, so they have different worker spots. So you might have a card that like requires a lot of people, so you might like put them somewhere where they have like they don't have a +2 spot, they only have like a -1 and you meet the requirement spot. So there's like a little bit of decision around that, but it's kind of fun because depending on how you build your cards and where you want to put them, blah blah blah. Every time you build a card, you're building a building apparently. And so you have little, you know, your standard Euro buildings, and there's a map, and you put your buildings out onto the board. You can get bonuses depending on where you place them. And you also have an objective card that you get at the beginning of the game. And some of them relate to having houses built on certain aspects of the board. And that's one of the biggest additions, obviously, in the in this game from the card game. And then I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's... I'm sure I'm missing something. My goodness. Give me a second. Let me think here. Let me look at the pictures. I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. And there are events. I think that's it then. Okay. Uh-huh. So this is, if you've played Oh My Goods, which I had, it's like, it's so similar, but it makes everything I didn't like and makes it just okay and better. Like I found.
Oh, okay.
I found with Oh My Goods, I know a common complaint was like you didn't feel like you could get your engine going enough or triggered enough. This game, you definitely can. It's a bit easier to trigger. And then the luck mitigation. I can't remember how it worked with the cards, but I feel like in this game, you have a little bit more control over how much you want to push your luck. So you have more control over the outcome.
Cool.
So bits, I always talk bits first. The cards are fine. The board is flimsy and the setup is a bit of a bear because this is actually a campaign game. So, it follows a story Similar to the first expansion for Oh My Goods and like Maracaibo, which I'll be talking about. So you have to figure out what cards you need, and there's like a chart that you reference, and then because you have an event deck, certain events throughout the game. Well, first off, you need to build the event deck correctly, right? Based on the store and where you are at, and then the event cards add cards. So there's a little bit of like, for a fairly simple streamlined Euro, there's a bit of setup, which is kind of annoying. The story, so I mentioned there's a campaign. The story is like flipping a card, reading like maybe a paragraph of text, and then trying to accomplish something based on that. So like the king came and we need to send an army and they need apples. And you're like, okay.
Apples are like, important for fighting.
Yeah. So they're like X number of points and be able to trade in, 15 apples for whatever, 30 coins or whatever. So that's about the extent of it. So for me, it's enough. But even I recognize it as being a little bit weak.
Okay.
So, yeah. The game itself is fun. It's once you get some good production chains going and you got some stuff going on, it's just fun. You know, move this, put this, get a bunch of stuff, spend that to get more stuff. Love it. But I could see it getting pretty repetitive after repeated plays. I think I've played it like, I don't know, maybe four or five times now, and I don't feel like I'm really seeing anything really new and exciting every game, so it's kind of like, okay, like it's, yeah, you're a little repetitive. The solo mode, I think, is really good. Like, if you're into solo games and this sounds interesting, I think it's a good pick. The solo mode, I find, is challenging enough and just a nice way to kind of play through the game. It's fast. I do want to try to higher player counts just because I think some of the worker spots might be more hotly contested. Mm. Like in a solo game, you're like, oh yeah, I'll have that. Oh, sure. Cause you're not so worried about getting blocked. At least in this game. I don't know. I have fun with this game. I think it's fun. I think it's nice. I think if you like Oh My Goods, you will definitely like this. I think if you like solo games, you will like this just as something kind of light and fun. But like I said, it kind of gets repetitive. And I never really loved Oh My Goods. Like, I ended up selling it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did.
I think you're the person who turned me on to Oh My Goods.
Yeah?
Got interested in it. Yeah.
So you like the game then?
I do enjoy it. Yeah, that's what I was wondering about this game. Is that like, would it make you want to just be like, I just would play Oh My Goods as opposed to wanting to play this?
No, I mean Oh My Goods is still like a quicker card game, mm-hmm. right? Like, you're just gonna, if you really want to just like pump something out pretty quickly as a filler, like Oh My Goods I think still has a place. But if I was to sit down and I had the time and I was to pick a game, I would definitely pick Expedition over Oh My Goods. Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, that was me poorly explaining. Sorry.
I got to just
think about how to explain it. But I'm going to give it a 3. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It's a solid title. Yeah. There you go.
Cool. All right. The first pew I'm going to pew about is... Ooh, I like that. Is Tang Garden, which came out in 2020 from Thundergriff Games and designed by Francesco Testini and Perluca Zizi, with art by Matthew Mizak. And I will say Thundergriff Games sent this to us for the purposes of a review. This was a big hubbub, I think, on Kickstarter. This is the base copy I'm talking about, though, so it's not the deluxe version or any of the Kickstarter.
Which looks ridiculous.
Yeah, which is not any of the extra art or anything, as well as any extra components or anything. But this is at its heart, it's a tile laying game. So what you are doing is you're building, everyone's building a garden during the Tang Dynasty, and there's some information about the emperor you are, and you're just kind of going through it. Is a very chill, relaxed tile laying game. What you are doing is basically what's cool about this, and we talked about this last episode, games that there's very minimal that you actually do in the game, but a lot kind of happens when we talked about mini rails, and I'm forgetting the name of it, the follow-up to mini rails. In this game, you basically have two actions that you do. You either place a tile, so there are four on each corner of the board, which I'll talk about in a second, because really the board and everything else makes this game pop. But there are four different elements, so different tiles like water, mount, or four different kinds of gardeny stuff, so mountains, water, features is the word I'm looking for. Features, water feature, mountain feature, forest, and one more which I'm forgetting about, which kind of mixes all three together as well. And you're just placing them down, trying to match different elements. So you want to match, you're trying to match forest with forest, water with water, or if you match walking past, you get money, which is essentially victory points. If you're not placing a tile, the other thing you're doing is you're drawing decoration cards, and this is where you put different things on the board. And it's so hard to kind of not talk about the art and the components of this game, to save one for the other, because if you've seen anything about this game, you'll notice there are pagodas in it, which are cardboard chits that are placed into these plastic bases with plastic, really nice plastic roofs on top. There's bridges, which again are these plastic things that you put into bases, and they're gorgeous. There's trees that are very similar to, although probably better quality, the trees in like Photosynthesis that you kind of build together, you build when you first get the game. Then there are little tokens. But what you're doing, you're drawing the decoration cards, and then you're going to place one on the board, and they'll have things like pagodas, which whoever has the most pagodas gets, I think, 12 points at the end of the game. There's bridges, which give you 2 points per thing. There are the trees, which are set collection, up to 5 different ones. So you're trying to get different trees. There are things like birds and fish and floating plants and one more thing, which I'm forgetting about at the moment. But basically, you need to get two different ones of the same type. So like a bird and the fish and the water, or a floating lotus and the fish and the bird and a persephone, I think, something like that. So you have to get two different ones to score them at the end of the game. And all those decoration things that you play, that's the score points at the end of the game. There are also a number of optional actions. So whenever you match, where the optional actions come in are your dudes. So at the beginning of the game, there are 12 in the base game. There are more in the deluxe, but there are 12 characters that have minis, and you get one along with the card. And the card does two things. One, it gives you a power if it's active. So it might be something like get a point every time you place a bridge or something like that. And then it has something that scores at the end of the game as well, which I'll get to in a second. But every time you match, like if you match your flower, your forests or mountains or whatever, you have 3 different things on the player board. And every time you match something, one of those features, you can move it up. And when you pass the picture of a dude, you get another character that you're able to draft from the table or choose one blind, and then you get that character. Then you have to choose one of your two characters will go on the board and one will stay active. So you're basically doing this. The optional actions kind of arrange fall around the characters, and there's also tokens that you one-time use tokens that you can also flip to be able to, let's say, play 2 tiles instead of one, or play 2 decoration cards, things like that. The other neat thing that you might have seen about this game are the landscapes. There are 2 different types of landscape, and there are these gorgeous rectangle cards that you stick in the board, actually in the board, and you get those when you lay a tile if there's a landscape token on the board. And the landscape token landscape tokens are basically a timer for the game, because the game ends when there are 3 or less landscape tokens left. That signals the end of the game. So you set up the game depending how many players you are with landscape tokens, and then whenever you cover one with a tile, you take it. And I think the other thing the landscape tokens do is they let you refresh one of your special lantern tokens, like if you want to draw two cards, play two decoration cards or whatnot. But that's basically it for the game. There are some cool things with the characters and line of sight, which again is not something you normally see in a game like this. It's like, you know, for every water feature that your character can see in a straight line, you might get 2 points if you have a card. It could be the other thing they do is the landscape cards that are around your board all have little symbols on them, and your character might be, oh, for each pagoda symbol that they see, or each, I think they're called architecture symbol, you get 2 points, things like that at the end of the game. So that's a neat thing to work in. I think that's more or less the game. It works at a variety of player counts. It plays well at two. I ran this as well over like Skype or over like Zoom, which meant I had to do everything with it at multiplayer for a couple coworkers during our work game night, which was a pain. I don't know if I'd recommend that, but it does work because everything's open type deal. So it plays well like that. The book, it's super streamlined. Like, it's super duper streamlined. It's just those two things and the optional actions. It's not a hard game to teach. The components, obviously, I mentioned this before. There are all those features. There are all those, like, the pagodas and the bridges and the trees. Those landscape tokens are absolutely gorgeous. The board is really nice. The character cards are really nice. The miniatures are, like, not great. I know I've seen some people painting them, and I'm like, they're amazing painters because there's not a ton of detail on them, but hey, I wasn't expecting that. Everything else is really nice. It's the components and the quality of everything in the game. It's got that table presence. It's like the type of game that you walk by and you're like, oh my gosh, I want to sit down and play it. There is one big thing which I think detracts from it, and that is the symbology in the game. For a game that I think is so streamlined, and the rulebook does an amazing job of just kind of getting you, like, taking you through it, and, you know, there's nothing complicated about it. The symbology on both the character cards and the landscape tiles is quite small, and that makes things a little difficult and makes things... It just distracts a little bit, and it's what takes away from kind of what my final score, my final thoughts on the game will be, just because it is a bit of a pain. It's a light game. It's not a heavy game at all. It's, you know, kind of maybe one step above a filler, which I think is what they were going for, to be honest. So there is a fair bit of setup, because you kind of like have all the pieces. There are a lot of pieces in this game, a lot of components for a game that kind of, once you have it down, like, will take you 30 to 40 minutes to play. And it probably takes, you know, half that time to set up, because you have to set up everything, and it is a table hog, but, you know, first world problems, third world problems, first world problems. But overall, I would say 'tis a gooder, Michelle, as most of my games are that I talk about. It is a gooder, honestly. Like, what really, like, it's a low 'tis a gooder, so kind of like a low four. I think it would be definitely be higher if the symbology was a little bit better, was tighter on it. And I'm not sure what, there are a couple of expansions out. There's all the other content. I'm not sure what they do, but it's definitely a fun and gorgeous, game. I think you just kind of need to know that it is a lighter game, but if that's what you're looking for, something easy to kind of teach and play, and, you know, wet your palate for something a little heavier, or to even wind down, like, you know, not having to put it away at the end of the night. Like, you play a meaty game like you're going to talk about next, and then you finish the night off with something like this, and then be like, oh, I'm just going to leave it till tomorrow, because it does take some time to kind of pack it away and get going. But otherwise, Tang Garden is definitely 'tis a gooder.
Cool.
Yeah,
it looks really pretty.
It's definitely gorgeous. It's definitely what I mean. Thundergriff does really nice stuff with their things. I've seen some people who thought they were getting a lot more game, like, online with kind of it for you know, because of what it is, you know, it's definitely the type of game. It reminded me of what's that game from like Skybound, Grim Forest.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
It's just like, you know, that game is so, or Chai is another game. That,
yeah.
It's me. Yeah. Right. It's a good little game. It's a gateway plus game, but it's a super duper overproduced.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Hey, how there's something about a balance between the production and the cost and the weight of a game, mm-hmm. at least for gamers, right? Mm-hmm. Like
totally. Yep.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's interesting.
And I think that's something that might hold this game back a little bit is that as well. Mm. Just because, like you said, for a game, it's a good game. It's a good game, but it's a gooder, but it is a light game.
Yeah. So. Cool. Well, I was curious about this one, so good to know. All right. Well, my next Fist or Fun, pew, pew. That's a lot of P's, but it sure doesn't sound like it.
Fist or Fun, pew, pew might even be better than Fist or Fun. Yeah. Oh, look, someone's trying to take my job now.
Okay. This is Maracaibo, which I'm surprised I haven't played or I haven't talked about yet on this podcast, because it's kind of it's a Michelle game.
Yeah, it's very much a Michelle
game. It's a very much a Michelle game. So this is a game that was published in 2019, has 3,500 ratings, and has an average rating of 8.3 on BGG without a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So that's, you know.
It has already cracked the top 100.
Oh, really? Yeah, wow.
Ranked 100.
Crazy. That's awesome. This plays 1-4 in 30 to 120 minutes, has a weight of 3.92. Designed, obviously, by Alexander Pfister. Art by Floor something. I don't know. GmbH?
Yeah.
Aline Kerman and Andreas Resch. Published by Games Up. And who brought it to North America? I'm trying to think. Capstone. Was it Capstone?
I think it was Capstone. Yes, it was.
Yes,
because they were like the same time as Crystal Palace and the Spiel.
So, this game. All right. So, at its core, for me anyways, Maracaibo is a rondelle. Is its core mechanism. So, you have boats, and you're going around a map set in the Caribbean during the 17th century. And you're stopping at villages and cities along the way to do things to get points. Mm-hmm. You can move your ship. So you have a ship. Obviously, there's a bunch of different spaces on this rondelle, but there are also various paths. It doesn't diverge a ton, but there's a few points where there's a fork in the road, if you will, and you can choose to go either way. You can actually move your ship up to 1-7 spaces, which is a lot, because I feel like most rondelles are a lot smaller than that. And you can go around this rondelle rather quickly if you choose to do 7 steps. So what you're doing is you're choosing how far you want to go, 1-7 steps with your ship. And then wherever your ship lands, that's what you decide. Then you have various options for what you can do. So if you end up in a village, which are just smaller spots on the map, you have a few options. You're given basically action points depending on how many steps you took to get there. So if you moved your ship 7 points, you get like 3 actions. If you moved 2 or 3 or whatever, you get 1, for example. And on a village space, you can build a card from your hand, which is pretty important. So you have a hand of cards. They cost money to build, and you also need an action to be able to build them. And they do various things like move you up in some income tracks for points and money at the end of the round, so you get more stuff then. They give you benefits during the game. So, you know, if you move your explorer, you get +1 movement, that sort of thing. And they also allow you to place assistants, which are little meeples of your color that you place in specific spots. It'll say, place this on spot 18 in the village of whatever. And if you land there, you can take this action. So, you know, and then there are typically more powerful actions, right? Like, you know, get a bunch of money and move sort of thing. So that's what happens in a village. So you get X number of actions that, and, oh, and you can also get money, very little money, but money. And you can also
Money situation.
And you can also get rid of your hand of cards and get some money for it. So kind of similar to, I feel like a lot of Fister games or maybe just Euros in general, but I think I'm primarily thinking of Oh My Goods right now. You have the ability to kind of shuffle through your hand should you need in order to create the best combinations as possible. So that's if you land on a village. If you land on a city, you can deliver a good. There's like a little tile by the city that says, hey, if you have a, I don't even know what the goods are, an icon, a tea leaf. I think there's a tea leaf. Hey, then you can take a disc and put it here. And if you, the way you hand in these goods is via cards. So again, multi-use cards, they can be goods or you can play them down in front of you. So you can hand in a good and take off a disc. I'll explain why you would want to take off a disc in a second. And then you can take that action of the city. Again, kind of similar to what I've already talked about, you know, moving up a track, blah, blah, blah. But there's also combat. So there's three countries represented, and they have a number of cubes on the board. And as cubes are, the cubes are lined up at the top of the board. And as you do combat, you move those cubes and put them down into cities and villages. And as you take those cubes off, you reveal, similar to like Scythe or any game where you're upgrading your board, you're revealing more victory points, which increases the value of these countries. And each country has a track that you're moving up. And the further up you are, the higher the multiplier for those points. So, yeah, that is the gist. I hope that's clear enough.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do combat in cities. And then there's also an explorer track, which is a track, right? A typical Euro track, but it's just down at the bottom and you have a little dude, an explorer, I guess. And he moves down the track and you can move X number of spaces, you know, based on the action that you're doing. And then each spot gives you bonuses, money, points, etc. And there's also quest tiles, which come out after a round. A round being somebody's hit the end of the rondelle. And they'll like say, hey, hand in two goods and get this. But if you collect the quest, if you do the quests, they're good for for points at the end of the game. There are also the game's four rounds. There are four cards that one gets revealed at the beginning of each round that have like kind of end game points. So like, hey, for every quest tile you get, for example, get 5 points. And so you have to build those. If you want to score those points, you have to build them. And they're expensive. They're like $20. So that's another way to get points. And then I talked about taking discs. So when you land in the city, you can deliver goods. So you're taking these discs off your ship. So you have this board in front of you. It's a ship. It's got two discs on a bunch of different things. And every time you remove a disc, you choose which disc you want to take. Because once you've taken two discs from a spot, you've upgraded yourself. Some of them are immediate, like, hey, get $5. Hey, get 3 points. Some of them are, you have to move your ship less to get more actions on those villages. Some of them give you new combat actions. Some of them give you new village actions, that sort of thing. So it's very cool because you can kind of customize your abilities as you play the game. And of course, it enhances replayability because you can try different things for different games. The other very, very cool part about this game is that, I can't think of another rondelle game that does this, but as soon as somebody hits the end of the rondelle, so they've basically made a circle, everybody has one more turn before the round ends. So there's a real timer or timing element to this game. Like if you want to be like, oh, I'm going to go here and I'm going to go here and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And someone else is like, no, you're not. that can happen, right? Like, because they, you know, the players are controlling the pace of the game very much, which I think is very interesting and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, am I missing? Oh, yeah, you have a career card, which is kind of generic, but it's like, you know, do these things. And if you do them throughout the game, you get more dudes to place out as assistants or whatever, get more combat points and you get money and stuff, you know, like kind of that typical Euro fare. But that's, yeah, I think that's the general idea of the game. So bits. Okay. Nothing special with bits. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. The little ship upgrade discs are tiny. Like, I'm trying to think of what I could compare them to, but they're smaller than a penny.
Stack of pepper.
Yeah, they're really, really small.
They are, yeah.
And I feel like the board is nice. It's pretty, but I don't know. The graphic design on this game, I think, was a bit of a miss. Like, it's not super clear where the cities are and the villages are. Like, it's just kind of, it's not the best. It's not the best. It could be better. And the rule book. Oh, my God. This rule book is awful. It's so awful. And I know I'm not the only person who feels this way. I have played hundreds of Euros, and most of them I've read the rule book for and taught myself and taught other people. Yes, I make mistakes for sure. This game, I couldn't even get the gist of from the rule book. I was like, what are you talking about? What is happening? Like, it was just so poorly written. And it's there's a lot going on. Like, you're not going to teach the game in 5 minutes, but it's not like crazy. It's crazy complicated. Like, there's no excuse. There's no excuse. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible rule book. I've heard the second version, they redid the rule book. So fingers crossed for anybody who gets the second version. And it has a bit of a long setup and teardown. So one of the cool things is that you have a big deck of cards. You have kind of A cards and B cards, and your B deck is, you always use all the A's and you only use some of the B's basically. So that's really nice because, again, it changes up the game from game to game. However, you have to sort them, shuffle them, count them, integrate them. And then at the end of the game, you have to take them, you know, separate them again. The game length is worth it. The gameplay is worth it, but it's definitely not a streamlined setup. You've got to put all those little discs on your ship. You've got to put all the cubes out for all the countries. It's the setup leaves a lot to be desired, but it's worth it. Yeah. Okay. So I've only played this game solo, I should say, just as a disclaimer.
We didn't play this.
No, we didn't. No, I know. I know. I would love to play it multiplayer. So I've only played a solo. I've been going through the legacy mode. So the solo mode, I think is really, really good. It's got a deck that you flip over and you can choose the level of difficulty, which is nice. It's pretty easy to implement. There's only the combat is a little bit weird, but other than that, it's really straightforward. And I actually really like that it forces you to keep moving because the AI, the bot Jean, she goes around the rondelle fairly quickly. So she really keeps the game moving, which is kind of nice, right? It kind of forces you to really focus focus. The legacy mode is very cool. I like it. It's similar to Expedition to New Dale, and that's like a paragraph, but it's enough for me. If you're looking for a narrative game, this isn't it. If you're looking for a legacy game, this isn't it. But it's a nice way to play through a Euro where you get a little bit of story, a little bit of change, changes up the board, add some spots, changes some spots. That's good. They also have like a choose your own adventure style, which I really like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they'll be like, okay, part of the story, they'll be like, you know, you go on this pirate ship. Do you negotiate with them or do you pull out your swords? You know, and then depending on what you pick, I don't know exactly like how much it changes in terms of the final outcome. like you get a different story, but I don't know if both would converge to the same place at the end of the day anyways, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But it's still fun to kind of make a decision and then get your next little bit of story based on that decision. So that's great. I already kind of talked about it, but there's like tons of variability with the cities are going to come out that are the tiles that you put down for the cities are different every game, and where you place them are different. The cards are going to be different because you're pulling only a specific number from that B deck. Yeah. And like I said, there's different ways that you can set up upgrade your ship and stuff like that. So the fun really comes in like comboing your cards. There's these tokens that you can get when you build certain cards, and if you build another card, it might have some synergy with that token. So like really just kind of figuring out a really nice engine, I guess, or synergy between everything is super fun. You have to be pretty selective with what you do, at least if you're playing with people who keep the game moving. And upgrading your ship is super fun, you know, just deciding what you want to do there. And I really, really like that whole full stop at the end of the rondelle. Like, okay, you know, it's like, you know, Great Western Trail. Like, yeah, the game keeps progressing every time they get to the end, but you can still meander. There's no meandering. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
I got burned with that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, oh, I can't. Yeah, I can't do that. And there's lots to do in this game. Like there really is. There's lots to do. So it's really fun. Like I said, I've only played this solo. I'd love to play this with more people. I think the whole combat country scoring would be a lot more interesting with more people.
Yes.
Yeah, with solo and with a fairly predictable bot in some ways in terms of what they're going to do on the on the country tracks. It's like not super interesting, and I think I would like to see the dynamics that come out with that with more players. Yeah, I feel like talking about this game, I want to give it a 5. It's got the spark. Yeah, so I'll give it a 5. I started once I got over the rule book. This was a game that I just like was addicted to. Like I played it. I actually, my mother took my daughter for a day and I played this like 3 or 4 times in one day. So also because it's such a brutal setup that I was like, well, I'll set up. So
yeah, that's fair.
Just going to like,
I could see that. Yeah.
Just continue. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's a really great game. I know it's been popular and it's done well. So I know I'm not alone in that feeling, but that's a hit. Good job, Fister.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, it's definitely kind of on the heavier scale from what I'm used to, but I really enjoyed it. I think I played it twice and both times really liked it.
It's fun.
It's definitely nice. I think it helps me that I played Great Western Trail quite a bit before. I think that kind of helps things a little bit, but I think I prefer this to Great Western Trail. I know that's the big thing that people talk about on the interwebs.
Yeah, I actually played Great Western Trail like 2 days ago. I still love that game. Oh, it's a good game. But yeah, I feel like Maracaibo is a little bit of a cleaner, streamlined design than Great Western Trail. Yeah, but they're both fantastic.
They're both like that. Yeah, Great Western Trail has grown on me a lot over the years.
Oh, I love that game. Bad at it, but love it.
I mean, that doesn't matter. As long as you're having fun, that's what's... So, speaking of games people are bad at, Michelle, I am horrible at my next pew-pew, and that is Tiny Towns. I am so bad at this game, which was released in 2019. We may have talked about it on the show, but again, I'm going to talk about it in a different light. Tiny Towns, released in 2019, currently has 7.4 overall rating on BGG, designed by Pierre McPherson, with art by Gong Studios and Matt Paquette, and published by AEG Games. So this is a abstract game where you are basically selecting different resources for you and whoever you're playing with to place on their grid, as you like to call it, which is what, 4x4, 5x5, 4x4, I think, because you only have 16 turns, 16 times to place. So you place a resource, and in the middle of the board are 5, 6, 7 different types of buildings, and they'll all have some sort of polyomino-ish type shape on it with different colors, which are the resources. And if you make that shape on your grid, you get rid of all those things and you place one of those buildings on there, and you score points based on the type of building. That's kind of the game in a nutshell. There's a ton of variability, though, because there are, what, 4, 5, 6 different cards of each type of color of building that you put out. There was an expansion out. They just announced another expansion. So they're probably going to, it's done fairly well, so they're probably going to keep pumping things out. So there's tons of different variability with the different types of buildings that you do. It's a relatively quick game that plays in, BGG says 45, 60 minutes. I don't think I've ever had a game that's lasted near that. I think it's usually about a half hour, 40 minutes. What I've played this a few times now, though, is over Zoom. So over a video platform. I was going to say video therapy platform, a video platform. over a video platform. And we've played it where everyone kind of has their own copy, and one person will just put their camera or their iPad or whatever they're doing. I have, as I mentioned before, a little USB document camera type dealio. So I would just put it over the cards that are out, and then I run my board. Everyone trusts each other. I mean, you can, if you really want to be serious about things, you can, everyone can show their board and you can put their boards. But I don't care. If I want to see someone's board, I'll say, just flash your thing on the board. I don't think that much about strategy, but whatever. But it works really well in kind of a distance environment, in a digital environment, as a way to, again, I talked about last week with Unmatched, a way to play a board game with actual people and touching actual bits. I'm sure if you go on Tabletopia or Tabletop Simulator, there is probably a thingamabob for Tiny Towns. But again, I like being able to feel the bits. I like, you know, conversing with the person and just making it feel as much like a real game as possible. I was even able to, we played with a Bitzer a couple weeks ago, Darren, and my wife actually was down here and played a few games of it too. So we were just sitting next to each other. The camera was on both of us and we were doing the whole spiel with it, and it worked really well. I don't see why it couldn't work if not everyone owned the game. If one person ran it and you used pretty much any kind of proxy, like you could do a 4x4 grid and use anything for the different buildings mm-hmm. and cubes. You know, I'm sure you could find those particular color cubes that the game has in a variety of other board games you have, and then you could use whatever proxy you want for the building when you build the building. There's no reason you can't do that as well. So just thinking, Tiny Towns for me. What's neat about Tiny Towns too is a game that has been on my for sale pile. Was on my for sale pile forever, and I just didn't get around to actually posting it, actually selling it, because I am so bad at these types of abstract games. I am awful at them. But once kind of we went into lockdown and I saw EEG was running, I think they still do daily at noon or whatever, games mm-hmm. of Tiny Towns. Once I saw that, hey, this is a game that could work, I was okay, I pulled it off the show and I played it, I think, like 7, 8 times now since then, just over digital. Again, then when I had my game night with some coworkers, it worked really well. With some colleagues, it worked really well, and played with my wife and different things. So, yeah. Tiny Towns, tis a gooder for me. Tis a gooder. I'm probably not going to say it's it gives me the spark, because I suck so badly at it and I get furious with how badly I always get beat, but definitely tis a gooder.
Nice. Yeah, this is go ahead.
I was just going to say, it probably, you know, it has the spark in terms of games you could play over Zoom or Skype or Facebook, though.
Oh. Yeah, it is good for that, for sure.
There aren't a lot of not party games / mm-hmm. strict roll and write games that work well in that environment, and this works awesome in that environment. So
cool. Yeah, this is, I sold my copy. I didn't find the gameplay that interesting, like the whole pick a cube color, flip a card. But I regret selling it. Like, it's one of those games that I keep thinking, I wonder if I should get that again and try with the expansion as well.
Yeah, I don't know. The expansion. I'm not sure what it does. I'm not sure. I know they just announced a new expansion. I'm not sure what they do, but
I know they added money, but that's about all.
Money!
Mm-hmm.
Nice. That's Tiny Town from AEG.
Do you know what else is noise?
Noise. What? You know, I got mixed up. This is our BGG thread spotlight, wherein we use other people's comments on the BGG thread to make content for our show.
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it, man. If other people are gonna be more insightful / funny / rude, let them do it.
That's right. So this thread we're focusing on. Oh, sorry, what?
Go ahead. What's this one?
All right, it's switched from heavy board game. I copy and pasted it. Switched from heavy board game to lighter and small games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Athelis 55 is the original poster, and he says, I discovered the board game hobby a few years ago and was focusing on heavy games almost exclusively solo because my wife doesn't play so often. Now I am surprisingly heading towards smaller games, which require less time to set up and play. Did you have the same switch at some point?
Well, let's see what the BGG... what the BGG folks have to say. Though Ogres says, I try not to buy very big games because usually friends or acquaintances bring them from the US for me. I'd like more heavier and meatier games, but since they're also a bit expensive, I try to buy lighter fare to enjoy with my GF friends and family.
Eric Betton says, I have been like a yo-yo for years. I started with Gateway, then craved heavier games, struggled to get the heavy games played, and found myself enjoying quicker, lighter games. Then my appetite for deeper games with strong themes kicked in. Then I went to Abstract 2 Players. I think you will find yourself craving enjoying different types of games for different reasons at different times. The beauty about this hobby is that there's room for every phase. Always keep an open mind and avoid defining what games you will only play. You may miss out on some amazing gaming experiences. Eric, you should write a book.
I'm clapping for Eric, yeah.
Yeah, we figured as much, but thanks for spelling it out, Sean.
Sorry, I want people to think I was burping or something. Something gross.
No, it did not sound like a burp.
Okay, good.
Okay.
I guess we'll talk about this probably after, so I'll leave it. Arvid says, for me, buying lighter, quote-unquote, gateway games has almost always been a mistake. I've realized that I never prioritize that kind of game, and they often remain unplayed until I sell them.
Huh.
Well, Arvid, that's like every game for me.
Wax bottle. Hi, wax bottle. I try buying games that will get played. This limits me to light games that I can play with my parents and kids and medium-heavy games that I can play with my wife and friends. Still, I try to limit my collection to games that I enjoy. The one switch I've made is that I prefer not playing fiddly games if the gameplay is not engaging enough.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
JD Top says, what I play mostly depends on who I play with and how much time I have, so I have a bit of everything. Heavier games simply hit the table less often because they require more time and fewer people can play them.
This is not my name, says. I read a comment a little while back from someone who basically said they don't mind heavy games, but they need to have a very good reason for being heavy. This is where I'm at as well. Many games are very heavy mechanically, but those mechanisms seemingly exist only to create the heaviness. If you like solving the system, I'm sure that's great. But for me, I want a few other things from games. And this devolved, of course, into this like lengthy discussion about what it means for a game to be heavy.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Finally, Franz K says, I've generally moved towards heavier games that I can solo. Ultimately, the most important thing in terms of games I play with others is games they like. Whether that's my wife, friends, or kid. I love a good light quick game with family and a heavy game on my own or with friends. But more than anything, I like a game that gets played a lot. And Franz K.
Game that gets played a lot. What's that?
Franz K. basically sounds like me. It might as well just be Sean P.
Yeah, I thought so too.
That's kind of, yeah, like I love heavier games. I do. I enjoy, like you talked about Maracaibo and the two times I play more Maracaibo. I have really, really enjoyed it and had a great time. I don't own Maracaibo because that, at least most of the people I play with, that's not the type of game certainly not my wife, most of my friends, the people I play with, that's not the type of game they particularly enjoy. So that's why I don't, and I don't solo very much. So even though, honestly, you talking about Maracaibo made me want to try Maracaibo on my own. But yeah, so I find myself very similar to Franz K. How about you?
I found myself most familiar with Eric, who said he was yo-yoing. So I feel like I've been yo-yoing and gone through different phases depending on who I'm gaming with. So at the beginning, I gamed a lot with my husband, Rich. So I would buy a lot of two-player games, a lot of two-player only games. And now that I play with him a lot less, I don't. Like, sometimes I'll buy one if I'm really interested in it, but I generally try to stay away because I'm either playing alone or usually with three or four people. I also used to play a lot more with my niece and nephew, and so I had a lot more, like, family games in my collection, and then they've become teenagers, and they're way too cool for me. So those have kind of gone out of my collection. And then, yeah, like if I see a game that I think, you know, the people I game with, I think will really like, then I'll usually pick it up. But the one thing that's mainstayed is still the midweight Euros, which are kind of my happy place. Those have never really yo-yoed. I play alone a lot more now. And I'm okay playing like two-handed, for example. Mm-hmm. It's not my preference, but I'd rather be playing games than not playing games. So I've kind of yo-yo, done different things, tried different things depending on, you know, who I'm playing with and what I'm enjoying. I have gone through phases where I'm really into heavier games, and then it's like lighter games. Obviously, when I had a baby and I was barely sleeping, if I was going to play a game, it was going to be very light. So things like that definitely have influenced my playing. But I'm still, medium weight has still kind of been a constant for me.
Yeah, that's not surprising at all.
I mean, you had me at beige, so.
That's true. Yeah. I was thinking before that I almost feel like, yeah, as soon as, like, when this is over and I can actually game with people, I'm just going to want to play, like, super social, ridiculous games.
So oh, yeah?
Interact with other people.
Yeah, I really noticed also going from, like, two-player to four-player was, like, suddenly you play a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a lot less to the table. Like, it, if you play a heavier Euro or even a midweight Euro, you can maybe, you know, you'll play one in a four player with four players, but you might be able to get out two with two players.
Yeah.
Yep. So sometimes I'm a bit more hesitant to pull those big ones out with four because they're long.
That's fair.
They're really long.
That's true.
Yeah. All right.
True that.
Speaking of true that.
Yeah, true that. I can't do that.
Oh, that's pretty good. This is our shipping out bit, wherein we identify which bits are being banished from our homes.
Banished! Get out!
Get out of here!
Get off my lawn!
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So, here, I'll start here, because I think you sent me a text about
what?
This one.
I know, I was so surprised.
Some controversy, some all the bits controversy. And that is on my for sale pile currently is Kashgar, Merchants of the Silk Road. I raved about this in one of our first episodes.
You've raved about this so many times.
A lot, yeah, and I've played it a lot. I've played it a fair bit, although not, I think maybe only three or four times my copy. But so this is a deck building, quasi deck building, pool building, but you're basically building three different decks in front of you at the same time. And this was a game that was not out of print. That was, I actually first played it with you, Michelle. You had a copy you made into English.
Yes.
And that's where I played it before it was even announced to being here. And then I played it with you, I think maybe a couple once or twice, and then like ran to like healthy border, like Yukata or like one of those websites, and played it a ton because it was the only way to play it unless you made your own copy because it wasn't available in English. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. And between everything, you know, if I count how many times I played it online and your copy and then my copy, you know, I've probably played it about 30 times. But it has not hit the table, basically, like when it first came out from, I forgot who released it, maybe Grail Games, I think, released it. It came out and I got it right away, obviously. Like I had it pre-ordered and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to get this. And as soon as it came out, I played it like a few times. I was eagerly excited. And since then, and it's probably been a year and a half, I don't know if it's been played. So I'm like, when I was going through my games, I was like, okay, it's time. And I just sold it today.
Crazy.
Like, I do enjoy it. I do like it a lot, but hasn't been played in a long time, and I do have a lot of deck building games. So
is there a reason? Like, do you remember like seeing Kashgar on the shelf and there being like something specific in your mind that made you go no?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like usually when it's that type of game, I'm going to go to like Clank or I'm going to go to, Dominion. Dominion, but mostly like I'm going to go to Clank or Arctic State Scavengers or, you know, or DC Deck Builder, you know, one of the other deck building games. And I just don't know what it is. Like, I just don't, because I love the game, but it's like, there's a reason it hasn't been played in so long. And it's definitely not a game, even though the community actually says it's best of two. And I probably agree with that.
I could see that.
Not a game I could get my wife to do. Yeah. There's a lot of downtime if you're playing like, multiple players. It's not a game I think I can get my wife to play. So it's like, you know, it's probably not going to get played for a long time as it is. So if someone else wants it and we'll play it, you know, I could always reacquire it if I feel bad about it later on. So
Kashgar is the game that tricked Rich, because I was watching a review. Rada loves Kashgar. And I was watching a review by him, and Rich is like, wow, he really, really likes this game. We should get it. I was like, okay. A game you'll play with me?
Yeah, I remember.
And then he knows that Rado is like, loves everything, so yeah. Doesn't work anymore.
Yep.
All right. Well, my pick for shipping out is Terramara. This was released by Quinhead Games. Big designers on it. Yeah, I was really looking forward to the release of this game. I've played it twice now. I like the game okay. I feel like maybe if I played it more, I'm sure a little bit of it would be revealed to me. Like, you know, I feel like two plays doesn't give it justice. Mm-hmm. But it feels like it was designed for four players. Even at three players, there's like a deck that you flip over and you cover up spots or something. I can't quite remember. It does it at two as well. So it just kind of felt like, yeah, it just felt like it was designed for four. I play it four, but it's a longer game. I'm just checking BGG here and it says it plays in 120 minutes. There isn't even a range. So it's a longer experience. I've played it with one of the girls, Lisa, who I game with quite a bit, and she didn't seem to love it too much, so I don't see it hitting the table very much again. And
I remember her reaction to this game now. That was hilarious. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's weird because Tom Vassell like raved about it. He really liked it. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, I only see it hitting the table if I have four, and then it's like it's really long, so I just don't see myself picking it up. There's also this military part of it, which I thought was, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Take That, and I felt like it was pretty Take That. It didn't end up being utilized a lot in the games that I played, but I saw what it could do and I didn't like it. It was just kind of bland, the game. It had some really cool ideas, like you could put your workers into the future. So the future had better spaces.
Cool.
Huh? Pardon me?
I said cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you didn't get your workers back at the end of the round. So you got like some really great stuff, but you lost a worker pretty much until you got to that space, like in terms of rounds. So it had some cool ideas, but yeah, I'm really disappointed in this one. Yeah, it's like Bersini, Flaminia Bersini, Virginio Gigli, Stefano Luperto. Like, you think I would be able to say these names by now, but they did like some of my favorite games. Agizia, I think Grand Austria, Lorenzo, Coimbra, like some of my favorite games. So I had really high hopes for this one. Mm. I'll probably regret selling it, but I just don't see it getting played. So well, there you go.
That's fair.
Womp womp.
I'm proud of you though for doing that for something.
I'm sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So cool. There you go. Selling Terra Mara. In theory.
In theory.
It was expensive. It was an import. So it's expensive to sell and nobody's picking it up. So yeah, we'll see. But anyways, there you go. We're ending our episode 62 on a bit of a sad note.
Mm-hmm.
But before we close out the show, we do want to say thanks again to all of you, our amazing listeners, and of course, our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. The next time you're playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.
The end.
Once upon a time, and they all lived happily ever after.
Yeah.
Except Terra Mara, which got banished.
Except Terra Mara. I'm going to leave that part in now. Stop.